Welcome to our Aspiring Principals webinar series. Today is Thursday, April the 25th, 2019, and my name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP. Today, we have two of our NAESP board members presenting on the topic of preparing for the principalship. Our first speaker is Kimbrell Barbosa Lewis. She is currently serving as NAESP's vice president. Ms. Lewis is also the principal of Cordova Elementary School in Tennessee. Welcome, Ms. Lewis, to our Aspiring Principals webinar series.
Thank you for welcoming me, Aaron. Thank you all for joining us today.
Can you tell the NAESP universe a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. I'm Kimbrell Barbosa Lewis, and I've served on the NAESP board for 4 years. My background is in education, a little bit of banking experience prior to being in education. I have been a principal for 9 school years. My current school has pre-K through 5th grade, and we have about 860 students. There are nearly 200 schools in my district. We are the largest district in the state of Tennessee. My school is one of about 30 optional schools, which is very similar to a magnet school. I'm also married to my husband, Trey, and I have 3 children, and I get to actively participate in my community, including my church, where I often see my students now, and also with Bethany International of West Tennessee. In the past, before becoming a principal, I was an elementary school teacher. Then I became a curriculum coordinator, which I thought was a very good beginning point to learning the administrative role. Then I was an assistant principal for 5 years and became a principal in the middle of the school year of my 5th year. If you'd like to learn more about my school, Cordova Elementary, and my school district, there are websites posted at the bottom of this slide that you can access to learn a little bit more about the school district, Shelby County Schools, and Cordova Elementary.
Well, I'd like to let everyone know that everyone's come in muted. And if you have any questions, we're going to use the chat box today for Ms. Lewis. Ms. Lewis, I'll hand this presentation over to you at this time.
Thank you. And we'll go to the next slide. Today, I want to talk with each of you about preparing for leadership as a school leader and principal. And I really want to focus on partnerships in 3 different ways. Partnership for professional growth, through shared leadership, through shared learning, and also through shared accountability. Let's start with thinking about shared leadership. As a leader, and you are a leader, as you aspire to become a principal, you are currently a leader. Think about the fact that leading is the process of achieving a collective goal through people. In the case of schools, we lead to achieve a supportive learning environment of high achievement and socially equipped students. As you begin the steps to become a principal and the lead learner in your own school, take a moment to think about a time that you experienced being at your peak performance. That's when you were in a state in which you were in a zone, in an optimal functioning. It's often called the zone. Sometimes it's called being in the flow. But it's when your talents are coming together to help you achieve at the highest level of performance. Think about that time for just a second. Okay? With your mental picture, where was the leader in that story? When you think about that time, often in those experiences of peak performance, there may not be a leader, at least not in the conventional sense. When we're thinking about seeking input and decision-making, I recall a time when I heard the story of Phil Jackson and his discussion of coaching Kobe Jackson. Now, I am not a huge basketball follower, but I definitely know who those two people are. Phil Jackson's thoughts were, I didn't dictate to him what he needed to do or what I needed. I simply pushed him to think about the problem in a different way, mostly by asking him questions about the impact that this or that strategy, whichever he chose, might have on the team. The most gratifying thing of all of this was watching Kobe transform. And that's when we think about rising to the challenge. He transformed from being a selfish, demanding player into a leader that his teammates wanted to follow. Now, to get there, Kobe had to learn to give in order to get back in return. Leadership is not about forcing your will on others. It's about mastering the art of letting go. Leadership's an act of controlled improvisation. So many circumstances face leaders daily. You have to keep your plan in mind, the practice you've done, but you also have to improvise with the help of others. So leadership at its peak performance combines your intrinsic motivation, your talent, lots of courage, and most of all, passion, our passion for our students. Next slide. So when we think of shared learning and partnering for professional growth, I want you to keep in mind the term that we've all heard many times, a transformational school leader. So what is that exactly? We've heard it a lot. But what a transformational school leader considers is the organization and the common good interest. They work in collaboration and in collaborative communities and see collegiality as a learning opportunity. As an introvert, that sometimes has been a challenge for me. But what it helps us to do is learn how to implement complex ideas effectively, reliably, and at scale. It develops a capacity within our system, within our school, and our districts to learn improv. Improvisational. A huge part of schools is improvement goals, as we know. We are measured and evaluated by them, you all. In the improvement process, we often consider how we're going to achieve those goals through strategy. But we also must recognize the dynamic impact of collegiality, the power of cross-school and inter-district connections can translate to achievement and growth gains. So, in thinking about colleagues, you all, I became a principal, as I said, mid-school year. My colleagues began 5 months earlier, giving them a head start on the improvement cycle. Though I knew my school's data, I needed practical solutions and insights to the step-by-step actions to move my school forward. I partnered with principals whose schools had similar demographics and achievement and growth data to mine. We devised plans together. We constantly had phone conferences to see what was working well, what was not. We also joined each other at each other's schools to see how implementation looked in their setting and in my setting. Also remember to continue your professional growth. I was very fortunate that when I first became an assistant principal, my principal mentored me in strongly encouraging me to join NEASP from the very first moment I became an assistant principal. That's one way that I've grown to get to know others and work on the national level, just starting with one conference helping me to prepare for the state conference in my district that was going to be hosted by my district. But continue your professional growth in all types of manners. What you're doing today is professional growth. Attend webinars. Read articles. They're all a part of what we do to learn and grow. Think outside the box also. We always think of the best way to become a principal. And that's really, really going to be even more challenging to figure that out. So what I want to do now is take a moment to ask questions. We're going to go to the next slide.
I had a question for you, Ms.
Yeah.
Lewis.
Yeah.
Being an aspiring principal, mm-hmm. are there any resources like a book that our listeners could actually read or any type of strategies you would give if they were seeking to get into the principalship but was a little nervous about it? maybe being overwhelming. Is there anything that you recommend them to read? I know you said you had a mentor, but if they weren't in that position and they just jumping out the classroom and they want to go into leadership, is there anything that you would recommend them to kind of research or do before they actually jumped into their role?
That's a great question. There are lots of resources out there. I can tell you when I began as a principal, I used Leading Learning Communities as kind of a Bible, a resource that helped me. And NASP offers it, but it wasn't just because it was from NASP. What I learned was there are benchmarks in there and checkpoints that helped me to know where I set goals at the beginning using that interactive resource. And there are checkpoints throughout the year to help you assess where you are in those goals that you've set.
Okay.
I also recommend that you participate in book studies in your district. So, for example, we have book studies or books that we may target for our district. Leveraging Leadership is one that our district started with a couple of years ago, and a new version has come out called Leveraging Leadership 2.0.
Okay.
And I would recommend that as well. I know we don't often use a disc anymore, but there's also a disc that has all of the handouts, all of the surveys that are mentioned. Another thing I would share is I attended a couple of different writing workshops for leaders.
Okay.
And it really helped me to organize my writing as far as how I kept up with documents, how I responded to parents, how I categorize things on my my PC. I keep everything in a specific order each year. And so that writing workshop really helped me to know how to stay organized with my new leading role.
Great. Thanks for the information, Ms. Lewis.
You're welcome. So we're going to move to the next slide, which helps us as we talk about thinking outside the box. This is a poll that we're going to do. So as you see it, I do see some people are responding in the chat, and I'm going to be sure that I answer some of those questions. But what I want you to think about right now is, what path did you or will you choose to become a principal? Are you going to apply based on your master's or advanced degree with certification? Are you taking advantage or participating in your school district's leadership preparation program? Are you in new leaders or a very similar aspiring principals program? Or are you doing a combination of two or more of those things? So Honor's going to put up the poll. And if you will choose what best applies, and as you're completing that poll, I'm going to take a look at Bradrick's question. He earned a master's in curriculum and instruction. How can I use that academic experience to become a principal? And how can principals ensure that teachers are adequately preparing students for state standardized testing? Well, number one, how can I use that academic experience to become a principal? So my master's was also in curriculum and instruction. The first thing I did using that master's was I became the school improvement chair and accreditation chair for my school. I was still in a teaching role, and I made an effort to talk with my principal, let her know that I was in that program, and I did one of my residencies for the program at my school. She allowed me to take on that leadership role, and that really gave me a foundation of understanding the big picture of school improvement. My previous view had been a classroom level view, so I didn't have that 360 degree view or that high level view of what it took to run a school until I did that. The other thing was, as I advanced on to my further degrees, I began, as I mentioned, as curriculum coordinator. In many districts, as a Title I coordinator or PLC coach or instructional facilitator. That program, that role is like a little microcosm of school leader, because you have budgets, you have compliance, You have a budget that also applies to staffing. You put on professional development for teachers, programming for students, and opportunities for parents to to participate in the school. So that was an excellent opportunity for me before I became an AP, an assistant principal, or principal. Now, how can principals ensure that teachers are adequately preparing students for state standardized testing? Well, I can tell you, Bradrick, that could be probably a day-long webinar in itself. The quickest answer to that is start with the data. You need to start with your summative state assessment data. And each teacher should be aware of where their students are and track that data throughout the year using benchmarking. And then we do what I call at my school Take 20. It's called something else at other schools. We have a weekly focus on specific standards that teachers teach in addition to the curriculum and testing format. And it's a time to also use that information to help with common assessments. So they take common assessments weekly or biweekly, and that data is tracked as well. So that's helping students prepare. Also, the accountability is shared with students and teachers in tracking and understanding the goals and what it takes to meet those goals. I hope I answered that question. Okay.
47% said masters, 7% said school district leadership, 20% said new leaders or similar program, and 27% said a combination of two or more paths.
Okay, that's great to hear. What I want to share, and the previous slide said think outside the box, I, long before I became an administrator, had my master's in certification. I'd gotten my EDS in administration, so I was certified in the classroom. Now, sometimes, everyone, it takes quite a bit more. Our district has a principal preparation program, and NESP also has an aspiring principals program. It's very competitive in my district. It's a large district, but it is very competitive. I also, as an assistant principal, after 5 years of being an assistant principal, enrolled in the district's preparation program. Within my district, it was very rare that you, at that time and even now, could become a principal without having gone through that preparation program or a similar program like New Leaders. Think outside the box. It may take a combination of both for you to be prepared or for your district to recognize that you're prepared. So think outside the box. Okay? So we're going to go to the next slide, and we'll get ready to share with Victoria after this next slide. Partnership with professional growth. When we partner for professional growth, we've already covered that one, so we're going to move to the next one, partnering for shared accountability. So when we partner for shared accountability, that's when we see a difference in a teacher leader coming up to being a principal or assistant principal. You own the work and the responsibility. So aspiring leaders often share with me that they would like to soon become a principal. As a school leader, I'm continuously aware of teachers and aspiring leaders who go the extra mile. So they're volunteering to lead teams. They're helping students transition in the hallways. They're serving as substitute administrators when I'm out or my assistant principal's out. They're staying for programs. They present themselves as the leaders they want to become. Also, know your community as a school administrator. I served in three very different schools. One whose parents line the hallways every day to come in and get to go in and be volunteers in the classroom. One was in a very high poverty level with little diversity, and the community was encroached by gangs. And my current school is very different from both. In each situation, I learned the culture for the teachers, staff, who were the influencers for students, and for parents and community partners. Cordova, almost all of our community partners are churches, and this is expanded every year. But during my first principalship, there was one church and a Navy base. Keep those in mind, because those partners will help you to support teachers and students. Lastly, I want you to remember to seek the unknown. We're not going to know everything. As the principal, I'm not always the expert. I do have teacher experts. I do have peers who may be an expert on a subject. And don't be afraid to have those tough conversations. The most difficult thing for me is when a conversation is contentious with a parent. So don't be afraid. You learn from those moments. And even though those steps are difficult, they will help to grow you. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Ms. Lewis, for your time as well. I did have a question, just curious about your background and things that you did coming up as assistant principal and trying to go into the principalship. Delegation and stakeholders as well is something new for teachers who've never done that before. Most teachers really deal with their own climate and things of that sort, their classroom, and their delegated things. But becoming assistant principal or principal, you now are the person who's going to delegate. How does someone feel comfortable about doing that? And secondly, coming in as a principal, how do you establish relationships with stakeholders or the community when it's something that you haven't done before on that basis? If you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure. So as far as delegating, when you are a teacher, you may serve as a teacher leader, and in your teams you may participate in PLCs. And in PLCs, each person has a role. So if you lead the planning or you lead the PLC, you can delegate those roles. So it's similar as an assistant principal coming in. You know your strengths and you know where you need support. You need to learn, do surveys of your teachers, what their strengths are, what they enjoy doing. I do that every year. Also, what committees and teams they like working on. That helps me to delegate the responsibilities. And as a school leader, we have shared leadership. I have an assistant principal, a PLC coach, two counselors, and an instructional facilitator. We meet every Friday and discuss what we're going to be doing the next week, what tasks we're working on, and we decide together how we're going to share in moving the school forward. As far as getting to know your stakeholders, one of the things that I recommend that I did when I first became a principal at both schools is I had coffee with principal. Very simple, low cost. You just designate a time. I chose the second week of school because my kindergartners were coming in. And you just let parents and stakeholders come in, have coffee with you, talk to you, get to know you. I've also done ice cream socials before school started. Sometimes it's registration day. So the community can sponsor that for you. So you could get your local grocery store to sponsor that for you. Go talk to the manager. They're almost always willing to donate a gift card or some ice cream to help you. And people get to come in and just see you in a relaxed setting before they see you as, you know, in a formal setting as the principal.
I appreciate that information, Ms. Lewis, and thanks for those questions. We'll take any other questions at the end of the webinar you have for Ms. Lewis, and we're going to go at this time to our next speaker, who is Victoria Reed, who currently serves as NAESB's Director of Zone 1. Ms. Reed is also the principal of Highland Elementary School in Connecticut. Welcome, Ms. Reed, to our Aspiring Principals webinar series. Thank you for waiting patiently with us. How are you today?
I'm great. Hi, everyone. Greetings from sunny spring-like day here in Connecticut. I'm happy to be with you all today. I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. I have been the principal here at Highland School for 18 years. Prior to that, I was an assistant principal in Groton, Connecticut, where we had 98% of the students who were Navy dependents. So I have quite a bit of experience as an administrator. Prior to that, I was a classroom teacher in New York State in primary grade. So my school now, Highland, is a pre-K-2 building with approximately 325 students and a staff of 74. I decided to begin this discussion by viewing it through the lens of communication. And I know that many of you are aspiring principals, but I took the step of looking at this as though you're about to take your first job. And so some of what I might be sharing with you are items that are probably not necessarily covered in your administrator classes. Some of them are, some of them may not be. So there are inside tips and things that I have found over my years of experience as a building administrator. So looking at communication and looking at building relationships, I've made that my first slide because I feel that that's the, one of the most important things you will need to do as a new principal. And the first one I have is staff. If you are fortunate enough to get a job this year or next year and 2 years from now, one of the things I would suggest that you do is take some time during the summer to set up a brief appointment to meet individually with all staff members. It's an opportunity for you to get to know them, to listen, hear what their concerns are, ask questions, take notes, don't make any promises, but listen to what they have to say. Find out what's working, what's not working, and some of those conversations will generate ideas for building goals that everyone can join around. Validate their opinions. Listen, listen, listen. One thing I would ask everyone who's a new principal to think about is honoring the history of the building. Your veteran staff members are going to know that history pretty well. So you don't want to step on any landmines and forget about, oh, we had this special ceremony. We always do it every year and you didn't know about it. So listen, talk to those veteran teachers, hear the history and honor the history of the building. As you progress, you'll discover who your major players are, who are the leaders, who you can count on. But remember to be fair to all, because as a new principal, you don't want to start out by having people think that there's, you know, the principal's team and there's everybody else. So you need to be fair to all, be respectful and willing to apologize if something is wrong. When you ask for forgiveness and being forgiven, that is a sign of strength and it can lead to mutual respect. Don't take anything personally. If there's the last thing I can tell you about staff sometimes can be tough. And it's important to realize that it's coming from a place of not necessarily understanding what the big picture is and to develop a thick skin, because it really isn't directed at you personally. It's about the situation or the materials or what's been going on. And that actually takes time. It doesn't happen right away. That you'll develop over time. In working with students, I would suggest getting to know the students right away. Meet them when they come off the bus. Go to the cafeteria. Go to the library. Go to the classrooms. Walk around the room as you would normally do anyway. But get to know the students. Ask them questions about projects. Ask them, as you develop your knowledge of the families in your building, you'll get to know about siblings, babies, pets. All of that is developing that rapport with the students and staff at your school, and knowing, building good communication skills with all of them, and having the students and staff see you as a member of the team, not someone who sits in a high office someplace else and doesn't know what's going on. At my level, as a pre-K-2 building principal, I have conversations with students all the time, whether it's outside at recess, in the cafeteria. As something as simple as a student losing a tooth is a big conversation, especially for my pre-K-2 students. Parents, the first thing I would do is have a meet and greet. Schedule a meet and greet with your parents as an opportunity to establish that first impression. Try to create a welcoming environment for all of your parents so they feel that they are a part of the progress of the students. Ultimately, all parents want their children to succeed, and they want to know that the staff in your building and that you as the leader of the building are doing everything you can to make sure that students are successful. That doesn't mean that there won't be some bumps along the way, but if parents know that you're working hard to support their child, you will be meeting them halfway. Be creative in developing opportunities for parents to be involved. The staff is half of the education of children. parents are the other half, and we need to be working together. As you know, many parents today, there are two working parent families, and it's hard sometimes for them to come in. So you need to think, as Kimbrough was saying, out of the box for ways for parents to get involved. That might be at night or sending something in over the weekend, connecting them with your parent-teacher organization. Any way that you can allow parents to come in and be a part of the school is very important in building that relationship. And lastly, if there are opportunities, and districts will vary across the country with this, if there are opportunities for parents to help in the decision-making process, and here in Connecticut, in my district, we have a parent-teacher advisory council. We meet every other month, and they are part of the decision-making process with what's going on in individual buildings. Parents like to have a voice, and they need to know that their concerns and voices are being heard, and if there's a vehicle for parents to participate in that, that would be great. And if you don't have one, if your district doesn't provide one, you could certainly start one. Let's see. In community, here's a big tip. Drive around the neighborhood where your students live. It's awesome to get a sense of where kids live, what the neighborhood is like. Are there areas for kids to play? Are there sidewalks? And if you have any additional time, I would suggest driving around the district. If you're new to the district, it's nice to know where the other elementary, middle, high school buildings are located, who is close by, who's not close by. But definitely driving around the neighborhood, I would encourage you to do. Reach out to community members and variety of business owners that are in the town. I would also include nonprofits and your public service providers, such as the police department, the fire department. They not only have materials for schools and students, but they also can bring some expertise in. We always have the fire department as an elementary school. As you can imagine, we always have the fire department coming to our school in October for Fire Safety Month, and all of our students have those little red hats to wear on Fire Safety Week. But also get to know some of your nonprofit organizations. We are a K-Kids school. It's a community service organization connected with Kiwanis International. And our K-Kids team, even though I'm a pre-K to 2, we meet once a month after school, and the students with teacher advisors pick a community service project to work on every other month. So some of the things that we've done is collected dog food and blankets for the Humane Society. We're just wrapping up a crayon initiative where old used crayons are sent to a company. They're melted down, and then they're made into crayons that are given to hospitals such as the Connecticut Children's Medical Center. So don't overlook those opportunities to make those connections. You have the opportunity to meet with community leaders. I would suggest doing that. We have a town council format here, so we have a mayor, members of the town council. They are invited to participate in some of our events that we have here in school, so any opportunities that you can bring them in. We have an annual Veterans Day program. All of those members of the community are invited, and they look forward to coming. So reach out to the community. They have not only financial resources, but material and information to share. All right, culture. Culture is tricky. Culture is something that you'll be working on a lot, especially in the beginning. The culture, which most of you probably know this, is how you do things in the building. It's an unwritten, there are artifacts around, but it's something that's unwritten, but it's how things are done. So when you come in as the new building principal, that's one of the things you're going to want to get a handle on. What is the culture? How can you positively impact and influence teachers who will in turn positively influence students? Obviously, part of that culture is going to be high expectations for students, respecting diverse opinions, and making sure that it's a welcoming environment. Aaron, I see you're on.
Yes. I had a question about culture as well. I know that that's something that principals have to focus on. Do you have any strategies that you do at your school to kind of make your climate more positive for new teachers coming in, because a new principal may get a lot of new teachers, first-year teachers, and they have to develop a climate that can be adapted for them to feel comfortable in that culture. So did you have any strategies that you could share that you used to improve your culture at your school?
Sure, yes. For new teachers, they here in Connecticut, we have a team mentoring program that's organized by the state. So they're a brand new first and second year teacher or assigned a mentor who's gone through the state training. But if I have a new teacher who's new to the building, but maybe have 5 years under their belt, I will assign them an informal mentor with one of my other staff members from either another grade or within that same grade. And they will show them all of the nitty-gritty things, like, I need to take a personal day. Where's the personal day form located? What's the procedure for lockdowns and fire drills? How do you handle this? That is their go-to person, in addition to coming to see me.
Great. Thanks so much.
All right. Next slide. All right. So as a new or aspiring principal, you're going to be looking at instructional leadership as the core of what you do. So the first thing to do is to build a strong team. And with building a strong team, trust is key. Teachers and other staff members need to know that they trust that you are looking out for the best interest, not only of them, but of the students, and that you will be working together to solve common problems. The big thing with trust is that it's a not I mentality, but a we mentality. You'll start by identifying what is uniting you and then develop a set of norms that everyone can agree to on how the team is going to operate. And the one thing that you want to make sure is that the team, whoever the members are there is some transparency, because you want the other members of the staff who may not be on the team aware that everything that's being done is visible and knowledgeable. The information is shared. It's not kept with one group of people. It's shared throughout the building, and everyone can have some say. But you do need a team to initially get started. The team will help you recognize and celebrate your accomplishments, and it's about uniting and motivating everyone. Creating a shared vision. This is something that takes time, because to create a vision for the building, especially the first year, you need to spend a year getting to know everything about the school, getting to know everything about the parents, students, the community members, all of those people. Once you do, the vision is unifying. It creates a purpose for how the building operates, what you're doing, that everything you do and plan for is connected to that vision. You model it as the leader. You model it for all stakeholders, and it shapes the direction of the school, your programs, and your plans. Be a lead learner. Let them see you learning. When there's professional development for teachers, sit in with them. Share ideas. Share information from your own professional development that would be important for teachers to know. That sends a message of collective responsibility and school pride. Bring in speakers and consultants for both the staff and the parents, and learn alongside them. There's nothing more important than to see, for teachers and other staff members, to see you learning with them. And that really helps develop the team that we're all working together. And remember, when you're doing this learning with your staff, it's a continuous learning and it's a journey. And they will know that you are all about learning and growing, and that's continuous. Shared leadership. I know Kimbrell talked a little bit about that. I'm just going to say that as a building principal, you cannot do it all. Cultivate and develop lead teachers. Promote opportunities to support and promote teacher leaders. And think of it this way. Think about opportunities for teachers. You have two classroom teachers. One has a very good, strong strength in reading, and another has a strength in mathematics. Have them visit each other's classroom. If it's possible to provide coverage for that classroom, cover the classroom so the one teacher can go observe the other teacher. we have been able to do, we call them collegial visits here at our school, and it is actually part of our evaluation plan, and we have allowed teachers to visit, and it is one of the most popular items that we have available for staff, and they come away with great ideas, other ways of thinking about things, and they ask really good questions. And of course, part of that I'm going to get to in a minute is data, but they'll ask questions about the data. How did you decide that? What made your decision to do that lesson in that way? And the teachers will share the data. So that is one of the big things that we've done here that we're happy about. And there are other opportunities for teachers to be leaders. Any building-wide committees that you have, sharing information at staff meetings. So it doesn't have to be I'm on the data team with the principal. It could be a literacy committee and teachers are in charge of that. I have teachers that are in charge of our safety patrol. So small steps. When teachers are ready, they can step up into the role of leadership when they feel they're ready. And data, I'm not going to spend too much time on that because I know you know a lot about data. Conversations with data can be tricky. Teachers and staff need to feel that they are not being judged, that the message that you want to send is that everyone is responsible for all students in the building, the progress of all students, not just the students in their classroom. And other sources of data that you need to consider besides assessment data would include attendance data, how many parents attend parent-teacher conferences. Those pieces of data, the qualitative and the quantitative data, are important to consider when you're making a whole picture of your school. Ultimately, the data is going to drive the direction of your building and may lead to change and promote solutions for improved results. And that's ultimately what this is all about. Okay. This is definitely for all of you aspiring and new principals. Join your state associations and NAESP. Your state associations will connect you with other principals, will provide you with opportunities for professional development. You'll meet colleagues. I can't stress enough the importance of being involved with both your state and national association. I have been involved with NAESP for 10 years, a member since 2001. So I have a long history of being involved, and it's allowed me to be connected with principals from across the United States. And today with the technology that we have, like Google Hangouts and FaceTiming, you can meet other principals anywhere in the United States and connect with them. And obviously with social media, you can create your own little groups and chats, and it's great. And what's great about being involved, you hear what's happening, especially at the state level, you'll hear what's happening at your state because your state association will be connected to what's happening at your state level as far as the State Board of Education. What are the new policies and procedures that are working through the legislature? What legislature? What do you think is going to be coming down? What is that impact going to be on actual elementary school principals? So being connected, they'll have that information for you. They'll also connect you with other new principals, just like NAESP will. You'll also be able, if you go on the NAESP website, find lots of information to help you, especially if you're a new principal. Working with a mentor, I strongly encourage it. A mentor or coach is great, especially your first couple of years out. They're your go-to person when you have questions. It could be a mentor in your district or maybe a mentor who works in another district. They're great about guiding you with questions. And remember that there are no dumb questions. There are great questions that you need an answer for. So working with a mentor will provide that guidance that you need for questions that come up that you never even thought about, especially as you're going through your program, questions that you wouldn't imagine that you would have to deal with, and you want to know what's the best way to go. Network with colleagues in different districts. I would even strongly suggest that you go visit other buildings. Find a time to go. When you go and do a walkthrough with another principal, you see different things. You get ideas. You ask questions. You might find a different way or a better way of doing something. I love going to visit other colleagues in different districts, and I love having them come visit my school because we learn a lot from each other just by doing a simple walkthrough. And my last question, my last bullet actually is about the work-life balance, and this is important. This is a very demanding job, and it can consume you, and you don't want that to happen, or you will burn out. So what you need to do is to become a strong leader is to develop some habits that will allow you to be able to make that balance between your work life and your home life. Some of the habits that might help you with that are your schedule. Maybe you set up a time in your schedule where you do your walkthroughs, a certain time when you do answering emails. Maybe there's no emails on the weekend. You have to figure out what works for you. And then stick to it. And that's the hard part. Stick to it. The other thing I would suggest for a work-life balance is really getting to know your office staff. They are the gatekeepers for me. And so they have my calendar. So I'm not answering emails when a parent or a teacher or somebody needs to come in to see me. They set up that calendar for me. And they manage that aspect for me. And I would also strongly ask you to consider delegating. If you can delegate work, delegate it. And then think about your mental and physical health. This is where the work-life balance comes. If you are a person who likes to run, I like to do running, make sure you have time to do that. Schedule that, you know, on your weekends, or if your job is to go running and you want to go running, say, at 5 o'clock, make sure you're out of the school by 4:30. The building will still be there, the emails will still be there, but you need to be able to have a life and be able to enjoy coming to work every day. So working on the work-life balance will be very important so you can still enjoy the job.
Well, thank you, Ms. Reed. Are you done with your presentation? I just want to make sure.
Yes.
Yes. So I wanted Ms. Lewis to come back on as well. I had a question for both of you all as we go into the question box, the chat box, however. We had several questions from people, but the big question that I have is for those people aspiring to be principals. They've never dealt with their colleagues in an authoritative way. How would they deal with marginal teachers or teachers who are not compromising when they become a first-year principal? Can you, starting with Ms. Lewis, can you give us a few strategies how you dealt with the marginal teacher or the teacher who gave you some setback on the things that you wanted done?
Well, this is a challenging area. It still challenges me. As we mentioned before, I always start with the data. And in doing informal and formal walkthroughs, sharing that information with them, giving them immediate feedback. If that doesn't work, I also had a coach to help them and support them, find out what they felt they needed support in, and start there. We also offered flex days, like on Tuesdays. We called them Teachable Tuesdays.
Okay.
After we gauged what teachers needed support in, we built a calendar for Teachable Tuesdays where they gave input on what they'd like to learn, or we asked them to go if we knew that was an area for growth for them. And they would go for just 30 minutes after school on Tuesdays and learn new instructional and technology strategies. Now, if all of that doesn't work, you all, and sometimes it doesn't, then you have to document your support.
Okay.
We have what we call progressive discipline. Sometimes you have to do a documented conference or documented counseling or reprimands when it shows that there is an impasse in doing what's best for children.
Okay.
We start with support. We build on what's needed.
Thanks so much. And you, Ms. Reed?
My thoughts are pretty similar. There's usually a level of intervention that is provided to the teacher. First, it would be, obviously, it would be myself. And if I see their areas of struggle, I would call that teacher in. We put some strategies into place. And if that didn't work, we do have coaches here, a literacy coach and a math coach. I would have them work with the teacher. And then I would have our curriculum director would also be a part of that, at least as far as giving me additional strategies to support the teacher.
Great. Well, we have several questions in the chat box, and I'll get Honor to read them, and we'll get some feedback from both of you. We'll start with Ms. Lewis, and then we'll come back with Ms. Reed with the responses. Honor, you want to read one of the questions?
Sure. Can you guys give us some give your audience some strategies that you have for balancing work and home? Both of you are busy, and I think that our audience would like to know, you know, what strategies or recommendations you have on that.
Okay. Ms. Lewis, I think you're mute, but you can answer that if you know how to balance work and home.
Well, I will be very transparent with you all and say that is a tremendous growth area for me. Okay. But there are a couple of things that I will say that I ensure that I do. I no longer have work email on my cell phone.
Okay.
I did that at one point, and I was pretty much just jumping every few seconds because I was getting work emails all the time on my phone. So I do not put work email on my phone. I don't have it come through that way. At night, my phone at 10 o'clock goes on do not disturb. Because also I was getting texts throughout the night from teachers just letting me know my child's sick and I'm not going to be able to come in. And I'm one of those people that can't go to sleep easily. So those two things kind of saved me a little bit of my normal stress and anxiety. But the other thing is I also share a lot with close friends and colleagues and my husband. So I seek support from them.
Okay.
A lot of my friends are also principals, and we spend time just kind of debriefing with each other. The other thing is I don't neglect the holidays. I don't neglect special occasions for my family. Those are the most important things to me, and I always honor them. So I always honor, even though I work year-round and I don't get the 2 weeks off for Christmas, I take vacation time to be with my children. And I try to always plan one trip during spring break or fall break. I can't always do both. And I always have a summer trip for my family. Even if that's I pay for my family to come with me to the NASB conference, I still take time out for them when it's evening or I stay an extra day. As far as day-to-day, I am awful at work-life balance. I rarely go to the gym, which is not good. I do read a lot. So when I'm stressed, I totally pull out the nonfiction.
Okay.
I also, I kind of will escape in just a rom-com, you know, if I want to watch a movie or the Avengers are coming out this weekend, take the kids to the movie. That's the best that I can do at this time. Y'all, if you have any suggestions for me, I'll take your suggestions as well.
All right, Ms. Reed, what you have for us?
Well, I actually talked about that on my last slide. The other thing I would just say is that if you earn vacation days, take them.
Okay.
You might not get them back. And this job is demanding enough that everybody needs that time to unwind and recharge. And if you have the vacation days, take them. You won't get that time back with your family once it's gone. So,
okay, great. Honor, can we take another question?
Sure. William asks on the topic of handling parents. He says, in my limited experience, there are some parents who want to a certain result that may not be consistent with the district code of content, but instead meet their own agenda. They use the threat of going to the superintendent and even the media if their problem is not resolved the way they want. How do you handle those kinds of parents?
All right.
That's part of the job. You're going to always have parents that are very demanding. I have them come in, we meet with them, we try, if there is an issue or a situation, we try to resolve it at the building level. Obviously, the parents have the full right to take it out of the building if they feel that you are not solving or meeting their needs. But I would try to work very hard with the parent to come up with solutions. And then one of the things that you can't forget about doing is following up with the parent. If you meet with them, you come up with a plan, 1 week later or whatever you decide, follow up with the parent. Is it working? If it's an issue between students in the classroom, has it been resolved? Are there any more issues? Can you contact me? Develop a system where that parent can knows that they can get to you and you can talk about it. And hopefully that resolves it so that it doesn't go to the next level. But it could.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Did you want to jump in, Ms. Lewis?
Just real quick, because I have a large school, I want parents to know that I am not the only person they can talk to.
Okay.
So we make our counselors available, our APs available, if I'm not available. And actually, I ask them to start with the teacher. It's a classroom issue. My first question is, have you talked to the teacher? Uh-huh. Because if the problem gets to me and they don't like what I've decided, then they will feel unsatisfied and they want to go above me, which I always tell them they have it right. But I want them to start with the person that's closest to problem. So if that's in the classroom, we start with the classroom.
Okay. One last question. Maybe we can fit this in here. I think it's a good one. What is one strategy that you would have? Leslie writes about how one challenge of becoming a principal is learning to support and lead a variety of different personality types. What would be one strategy that you would have for doing that as a new principal?
That's not going to happen fast. You need to get to know each person as an individual. So my suggestion as a new principal coming in is spending that 15 minutes before the start of school or shortly after the start of school, having a sit-down meeting with that individual staff member. And when I say staff members, I don't just mean teachers. I mean your custodial staff, your office clerical staff, your paraprofessionals, art and music teachers. Get to know them, get to know what concerns they have about the building. I have found that valuable in the two different positions that I've been in getting to know the staff and having them get to know you. That's how I would start it.
Great. All right. I want to thank both of our board members, Kimbrell Barbosa Lewis, as well as Victoria Reed, for this information during our Aspiring Principals webinar series. Don't miss our Super Bowl of events, our pre-K to 8 principals conference. It's going to be in Spokane, Washington, July the 10th to the 11th. The registration link is at the bottom. Make sure you do that. And we, on behalf of our executive director, Dr. Earl Franks, our associate executive director of professional learning, Gail Morgan. I am Aaron Laurie, director of professional learning, here at NAESP. I want to thank my partner behind the scenes, Honor Feedy, for this Aspiring Principals webinar series. Again, catch us at our next series coming up soon. Thank you to our panelists. Have a good one and bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.